want to have it all. I want to have a successful career, and I also want to have the most amazing relationship and be also fulfilled as a mother. I want to be very proud of my intellect and use my left side of the brain and also use my right side of the brain. So I love the word integration. When we come from a place of integration between career and relationships, right side of the brain, left side of the brain, we show up more whole, more aligned, and more ready to serve.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Gabriella Mbon. She is a life and relationship coach, author of Becoming a Power Couple. Boom! Got my copy right here, tell you what. She is also a speaker and the host of the Life Engineering podcast, which I am grateful to be a guest on. So check it out. We got reverse episodes. And she's also the founder of the Coaching Academy, and she helps high achievers engineer extraordinary careers and legendary relationships without having to sacrifice one for the other. Welcome to the show, Gabriella.
Thank you, Kenny, for having me. Excited to do this again.
Yes, it's going to be fun. This time I ask the questions. I am far more comfortable on this side of things. I'm a recovering control freak. I'm not dead. God's not done. Well, tell me today, Gabriella, what is on your mind?
Today, what's on my mind is a lot of my family. First of all, it's been a week. We are back home from a week in the hospital. Ooh. My husband had spine surgery. Yeah. And
wow.
Thank God he's fine and he's recovering.
Good.
And also what's in my mind is really my family, because this morning we actually had to go to my youngest school to have a difficult conversation for the first time. My children this is the last one in high school. He's at the end of high school, and we never had to have these conversations in school. I didn't sleep well at night. I was nervous. Mm. And one thing that my husband said, and he drove today for the first time after the surgery, he said to the principal, he said, "We don't send our kids to school to get values, the teacher's values. We send them for the academics, the social values they get at home. This is our job." Because one of the teachers was trying to pretty much impose her own views on a 16-year-old. That was the reason that he said. So got me thinking about everything we went through in the hospital, what it did for our family in a good way. Mm-hmm. Lots of blessings, very reflective week, plus this. So this is what's in my mind.
That is a whole lot. And as you and I have talked, I certainly empathize with that, with my wife's recent brain surgeries and spending a week in the hospital, actually 2 weeks there. And it is a time of reflection, sometimes of like sleep deprived reflection, which feels a bit more like hallucination than reflection, if we're being honest. But with all of that sort of swirling, it's a little chaotic. It's focused really on the major relationships in your life. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, mention like the engineering background. Obviously, it's part of the title, but it's a big part of your story. And I still find it incredible that someone who is an engineer is now talking about relationships, because if we're being honest, we're probably not taking a lot of relationship advice from the engineers in our life. We're like, hey, if I need to calculate the square root of something or an angle or make a building stand up, I'll call you. But if I have relationship troubles, maybe I'll go to someone who's like hyper social or whatever. But what has that done inside of you? Like, you've got this engineering side and you got this very relationally driven side. I believe you said you and your husband have been married for 27 years, which is incredible, more and more in today's culture. How do you start to balance and process when these things, these big life things start to, I don't want to say happen to you because you're not a victim, but they're outside of the realm of your control, and you got two very different ways that you could look at this. How do you balance those two halves of yourself?
Wow. I thought we were starting with the easy question. What you're asking me, I perceive you view the engineering mindset as being totally in control and relying on your intellect.
Logical,
while the the other side more on I can't control everything and being more at the mercy of what life throws your way. But look, I love the engineering mindset. Why? Mm-hmm. Because it's an active, proactive mindset. Mm-hmm. It's the mindset that allows you to dream of a vision of something bigger.
Right.
Use your imagination, use your creativity, and at the same time, take the steps necessary to make that happen. So it's the visionary that I love about the engineer. It's mm-hmm. the visionary mindset. I am here, but I want to be there. And if we take the necessary steps, we can close that gap.
Right.
Having said that, we are not 100% in control of that. We should aim for that. But at the end of the day, we are co-creating our lives with higher power. So you were talking about relational, and one of the things that was so powerful when we were in the hospital is that we were at the mercy of the doctors. And my husband was saying it's his first time being hospitalized, and when he had surgery, he was put in to sleep, full anesthesia, and then it shuts down your breathing, and then they put they intubate you, and then they breathe. So you are you let go of control. Somebody's you are at the hands of another human being controlling your life, literally. Right?
Right.
I think that when we combine that intellect, that engineering mindset with also faith, then we create that win-win situation. We shouldn't worship ourselves, okay? And believe that it's all up to us. We shouldn't think that we are the source of our own creation. I think we should actually rely on, we should do our best, but also rely on the partnership with our own creator. And many times, and that's what I love about the week in the hospital, that was that dance and that art of pushing and letting go, and pushing and letting go. And when you intervene and say something, and when you let go. When you speak with the doctors, and when you let go. And this is such a difficult art. It's not black and white. It's not a formula.
Right.
So the engineering mindset is the mindset that allows me to have a vision and take action and build with intention and effort and understand that nothing happens without us taking consistent action. But at the same time, you need to balance that with knowing when to surrender and to let higher power lead you where you need to go.
Right. There's a lot to be said there, but this one phrase that my mentor reminds me a lot of, because like I said, I'm a recovering control freak. But in so much of building my business, I'm like, well, I've got to have this, and I got to organize this, and it has to be here, and it has to be here, and it has to be here. And or like in a sales presentation, he'll remind me. He said, look, do your very best. Are you going to know everything? No. And you know that. He goes, but do your best, but be detached from the outcomes.
That's right.
Because that's the part you can't control. Your effort is, and your commitment, your level of preparation, you can control those, and you should do your best, but be detached from the outcomes. And that just kept coming back to mind as you were talking through those different things. But
when it comes to goal setting.
Yeah, even when it comes to goal setting.
Put a timeline, not to when the results, when you're going to accomplish the results. Put the timeline for the steps along the way, the milestones. Say, by next month, I'm going to do this. But don't say, by next year, I'm going to be there, because you don't know that. You're not in control of the results, right?
You can control the inputs, not the outcomes. So you're processing through what can I control, what can't I control, when do we lean in, when do we pull back. I think as I listen to that, I know for myself and others have from coaching conversations or just friends, knowing when do we really dig our heels in. We try to take control and take agency of what's ours, and when do we need to be a little more patient, sit back a little bit. What helps guide yours and even your husband's sense of the timing in that? Because for, I think some people view it as there are those that know when to, and then there are those that don't. They're either like always on the control freaks, and then you got the other side of just whatever happens, happen, like some sort of like just lazy hippie sort of thing. And I hear you saying a both and, but that just feels very difficult. So what has shaped that or allowed the two of you to know how to do that? Because at least in your case, you're watching your husband be in the hospital, right? So it's not happening to you, but it is. So you've got to take someone else into account when you do, if you do want to press forward and you do want to be a little bit more vocal. So talk us through that, how you discern.
I wish I could give a formula for that, but of course there's none. That discernment is I was discussing this week with the friends. It's difficult. It's a thin line, but I can tell you experientially what I felt was, for example, we were in the queue for surgery for 2-3 days. So at night, when we realized he was not going to have surgery and he could finally eat, I would go home, knowing that the day he has surgery, I'm going to stay overnight. Don't ask me why, but the last day I went to the hospital, that's the only day that I actually took my toothbrush and my toothpaste. It's almost as I knew this is the day. There was an intuition. I think we were very present and we were in a very good mood. We were in a high consciousness of gratitude. And that's why we felt we were being guided, and including when to speak up and when to let things happen. I think that if you come from a place of fear, if you come from a place of lack, if you come from a place of reactiveness, it's going to be very difficult, because you're not letting the process reveal itself. You're actually trying to control it, right?
Which could actually just make things worse. You're no one else than just yourself. You're just like psychologically torturing yourself through something that wasn't necessary.
And you're missing the gifts along the way.
Hmm.
Because there were so many gifts. And by the way, we had fun during that week. We made jokes all the time. At a certain point, my husband said to the doctor, don't mistake my humor for the fact that I'm not in pain. You might think I'm not in pain. Like, I'll give you an example. Every time a doctor came into the room, and that ties into having fun with your spouse. Every time a doctor came into the room and didn't meet me before, so who are you? And I would say, I'm his lover, but he doesn't want his wife to know I'm here. And we had fun.
That's funny. That sounds like some goofy, twisted humor that my wife and I would use as well.
We never stop praying. I think this is part of what keeps our relationship alive.
Yeah.
We've been together for 30 years, 27, right? We never stop having fun and playing.
You said about being aware of where your thoughts, your intuition, your sensing are coming from. Is it from that place of fear, lack, scarcity, all those things? Or do you feel like you're in a place of joy, abundance, optimism, hope? Because you're going to have, your gut's going to feel something either way.
That's right.
And I've experienced the both sides of that. And I love the way that you articulated it simply. I should probably send more of my ideas to you so you could simplify them for humans and then I could use them. But something I have been thinking a lot about and even mentioned on I'm part of a coach community. We have a weekly call and I jumped on. And one of the things I said I've been focused on in the last 3 months since I could return to work and my wife was getting closer to being able to drive and all these things, she was finally recovering, is just have I been trying to be someone else in business? Have I been trying to lean into what all the gurus say, what all the books say? And it's not that there isn't wisdom out there to be gleaned. I'm all for it. Hell, this whole podcast is out here to expound on that. But there is a reason why it says how leaders think instead of what leaders think, because I don't think we need more what's. I think we need more frames and perspectives that we can apply to ourselves to get what's my version of your success. And it's been surprisingly more difficult than I thought. I usually lead with my gut, but there's just been life circumstances to where I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't trust it. And it sounds like you found a way to come from a healthy place and trust your gut on, okay, yeah, interesting thought. I'm going to take my toothbrush today. I don't know why, but this is occurring to me today. It didn't occur to me the previous 2 days. I'll just lean into it. And I think more people would probably be better off and have their own unique success if they leaned into that, so long as they're coming from that healthy place. Is that something you found and cultivated within yourself? Has that always been natural? And how do you help clients and others with that? Because that would seem to be somewhat central to just how you show up and operate.
It hasn't always been like that. I have to take a step back. I did my Enneagram after I saw your signature. I've done it before, but I forgot what it was. So I did my Enneagram, and my I don't remember the name. If you are SX, mine is self-preservation.
Yeah.
And then the SX. And last is the social.
Right.
Which I'm not surprised. And it's the three, right? It's the overachiever, the one that wants to achieve. Which none of that is actually foreign to me. It makes a lot of sense. But right. So I wasn't always like that. Yeah. I was very much into the hustle, the self-preservation. And in fact, the hustle motivated me. The self-preservation was my main motivator. Everything I did was just to buy a certainty. Hmm. And I came to a point that no longer worked. That it proved to be, it was a false sense of certainty and control. And I had to relearn what does work for me. It wasn't always like that I follow my intuition. I did follow my intuition 27 years ago when I canceled, 30 years ago when I canceled my wedding and started dating my husband. That was, yes, intuition. And that worked really well. I have to say thank God, because I made such a mess for everybody canceling the wedding a month before.
That's going to be part two of this conversation, separate episode.
Yeah. So I think I follow my intuition in big life decisions, like the career change from engineering to coaching, like canceling the wedding. But on a daily basis, I wasn't there. I was very much in the self-preservation, the hustle, the struggle, and using that as fuel. It is only in the last years. And of course, as we get older, we get wiser and we understand that.
Or at least we should.
Yes. Okay. I get that. You're right. That I realized that whatever took me here is not going to take me to the next thing, because now I want to live differently. So I had to relearn what it means to trust my intuition on a daily basis, not for life-altering decisions that I knew how to, but on a daily basis, and realign. And here's the thing. I think we live in a world of duality. Okay, whether it is I either am spiritual or I'm very logical and intellectual. I'm either succeed at work, I'm career driven, or I show up as at home. I prioritize my relationship.
Yeah.
I really don't like dualism because it makes me feel like I cannot have it all. And I want to have it all. Right?
Right.
I want to have it all. I want to have a successful career, and I also want to have the most amazing relationship and be also fulfilled as a mother.
Right.
I want to be very proud of my intellect and use my left side of the brain and also use my right side of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the word integration.
Same.
But in the beginning, in the first, I would say, 35 years of my life, there was no integration. It was mainly one side. It was very the logical, the engineering mindset.
Yeah.
I didn't ditch it. I love it. I honor it. But I added to it also my intuition. And I think that when we come from a place of integration between career and relationships, right side of the brain, left side of the brain, we show up more whole, more aligned, and more ready to serve. Because we're harnessing all aspects of us.
One of my favorite quotes comes from a man named Ken Wilber. And he has this line where he talks about that we should, should transcend and include. So it's like what you're saying is I did step in. I wanted to change the way in which I was living. I wanted to, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but almost higher way of living, more in line with your fullness and capacity. But that doesn't mean you had to like totally abandon. Nope, I got to forget everything I've ever learned.
Oh, no, we don't throw the baby with the water. No.
Yeah, yeah. So we don't want to do that. And also, I'd like to find the people who are throwing out babies in bathtubs. Like, who are these people? That's a different episode and maybe a different podcast entirely. It's just the exploration of crazy sayings. But I resonate with that. And I think a lot of people, sometime 30 to 40, 45 or something like that, at some point your personality stops working for you. You're not getting the same results. It's like that law of diminishing return, and you have a choice to make. And it sounds like you made yours and it's paying off and you're doing well. But how can we step more fully into that awareness? Because what I hear, and this is something I've observed within myself and my clients and others, is we have to gain an awareness of reality about ourselves, others, relationships, situations, be honest or candid, whatever your term of choice is. But really, it's about getting rooted in the reality of our identity, what it is and what we'd like to be. Because that's where I think even James Clear talks about this in the Atomic Habits, is that the most sustainable transformations come from a place of identity, not just behavior modification. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you see identity and self-awareness. Because obviously, like in your book, you've got the pillars, the you, me, our, we, like there's this evolution of identity within a relationship, but there's a parallel track of each individual as well. So it sounds like you've done a lot of research and thinking on identity. And if you could share anything, that would be awesome.
The first pillar is the me, right? Mm-hmm. And that's all about self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And although I say this in the second pillar, you should never stop doing a PhD on your spouse. I think you should also never stop doing a PhD on yourself.
Yeah.
We're always evolving. So our identity is evolving as well. And for me, it was always the overachiever. But then when I got married, became also the mother, the wife. And the idea that if I integrate my life, all parts of me, then I can actually play all of this. Now, when it comes to marriage, because it's, after all, my book is about marriage or committed relationships, there is an identity shift that happens there that I think not many people are aware of. Mm-hmm. When a couple gets married, there's a woman and a man, or if it's a homosexual, doesn't matter. Two people getting married, but for the sake of the simplicity, I would say a woman and a man getting married. But the moment you get married, that identity changes. Now you are not a woman and a man anymore. You are a husband and a wife, and that is the new identity that needs to be embodied. You have to grow into it. So for example, if as a man, I would look at other women because that's what men do and that's fine, then as a husband, I don't do that. Why? Because a husband doesn't do that. And then also looking at the marriage itself as an entity. Why? Why would you do that? What would you look at the marriage as an entity? You have an idea? What's the benefit of doing?
Look, we already did your podcast, all right?
Okay, all right.
I'm just kidding. Right. No, I love the concept because I teach this. I believe this about marriage and relationships, but I also believe this applies in organizations.
That's right.
That the shared relationship is its own thing with its own needs, its own desires of contribution. It doesn't take away from the individual, but it's also, I am not my marriage.
That's right.
Or any more than I am my company. Now, I'm a company of one or whatever, but my company is its own entity. I can't be my company. That's actually where a lot of burnout and other things happen, is when your identity as an entrepreneur gets so wrapped up in your business that you can't separate the two. So I'm on track with you there.
So when people see their marriage as its own identity, then they understand that sometimes even if, or you see your business is its own identity, if you have a corporation, even legally it's separate from you. But sometimes the business suffers and you still have to go and show up and do what you need to do. So marriage is the same. If you see it as an identity that needs to be nurtured and protected and grown, then it's not about, do I feel like it or not? Is I need to show up for that identity. In a way, that allows you to commit consistently and show up consistently and own the identity of husband and wife.
You've mentioned like your example with the husband, like how that changes from I'm a single man and then I become a husband. And you mentioned commitment. I heard somewhat recently Alex Hormozi, business guy, talking about commitment. And he says the simple definition I operate under is the elimination of alternatives. And he uses his own marriage of, he's like, when I got married, I eliminated all other alternatives to Layla.
That's right.
That's it. This is my commitment here. He goes, but it's the same thing in business, like commit to an idea, a concept, an endeavor instead of hopping around, which I really appreciate. And I think can be a difficult thing to stomach both relationally and professionally in business, because everybody's like, the next big idea, I've got to have the next big idea. The next thing is the best thing. But then when you get to, if you switch and you get to that thing, well, then you...
But that's the thing. If you own your identity, you are not, what's the word I'm looking for? Influenced by all these trends you were talking about.
Eight.
And that's why it's so important to really own your identity in your business identity. Be very clear. Clarity. It all comes from lack of clarity. I find that clarity is such a powerful force that we underestimate. So when you're clear about the identity of your business and the identity of you as an entrepreneur, then you are less likely to follow the squeaky wheel, to follow the trends and get into, oh, I'll just do that. And now I'm going to do that. And I'm going to try that. Because you are there for the long run. You're there for the commitment. You're there to build something, not for instant gratification. So identity, owning your identity, allows you to not let instant gratification run your life or reactiveness run your life. And I think that you work with leaders. I work with leaders more on the relationship career aspect. It is it starts with self-leadership, right? And self-leadership is making sure that your choices are coming from a place of your intellect, your intuition, alignment, and not reactiveness, based on your values, based on your vision, based on what you committed to create.
So let's bring that maybe full circle from what you were saying was on your mind. And you talked about your husband in the hospital and then the situation at your son's school. And I love what your husband said, because I've had to say similar things as well about where values are established. But I think some of that does get back to identity. Like, you're really addressing, like, values are central. There's a reason they're called core values, right? That we hold personally or as a family or even as an organization. So what role has or do core values play? It sounds like it's a little easier to get there with the situation with your son, but even in the situation with your husband in the hospital, what about your identities informed the way you were able to navigate through that with such hope and even making jokes and things like that? How did being rooted in that? Because you could just believe this is the way things are always going to be. We're just going to be in hospitals. It's going to go wrong. This is blah, blah, blah. Or, now this is the world we live in and we're going to have to fight every year and every teacher and every school and every blah, 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 blah. I think it's very easy to get there. And I think a lot of people are living there in their mind. I'm not antagonizing those folks for having gotten to that place. I'm given to those thoughts myself. But how did the core values and identity help you navigate those two situations?
I'll separate these to two different answers, two questions. Take first the core values. So during that week that my husband was in the hospital, I had two speaking engagements. One was a small talk that I had to give on relationships on Saturday morning. And the other was going to Niagara Falls to speak at a tech conference for the second time in front of tech leaders about relationships and career. And because I'm very connected to my core values, I just cancel everything. But I cancel everything from a place of inner peace. Obviously, first of all, we were in the queue for the surgery for several days, so I never knew when he's going to go. And secondly, there was no way my husband was going to go into the operating room without me being there. Mm-hmm. Right. And I had to cancel because it was a decision made based on my values. I had zero regrets. Right. He felt bad that I had to cancel. I said, don't feel bad. If this is what needed to happen, it's all good. There's a reason for that. And I would actually regret not being here because if I act against my own values, that's lack of integrity, lack of authenticity. That's going to create massive misalignment for me. I'm going to feel regret. And so I wouldn't want it differently. That's what I'm saying. So when your values are guiding you, decisions are easier.
Rewind and people replay that because that was a gold nugget. Let's say that again.
When you are clear about your values, then decision-making becomes easier.
Do you think that's why, when you were speaking of the importance of clarity, and I'm aligned with you there, do you think that's a strong contributing factor to the lack of clarity that leaders experience, is that they're not actually clear about their own values? Because if they were, decisions might be more clear and easy to make?
I think it's a big part of that. Not just values, but also why are you going after why is this your vision? What do you want to create that? Why is that important for you? If we take this a little bit deeper, we need to understand how we make decisions, right?
Yeah.
As adults, most of our decisions are an unconscious attempt to correct our childhood. For example, if my mother work two jobs and I never saw her, I might choose as an adult woman to be a stay-at-home mom. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. But if I do it from a place of correction, because I don't want my kids to experience the pain that I felt, then that is not a choice coming from values or alignment. That's a choice coming from correction. And when I make a choice from correction, I actually create more of the same, more correction. Now, if that choice was made of complete alignment and values, it will create only satisfaction for me. Now, when leaders make decisions in their businesses, in their positions, we want to make sure that you're making decisions from the right place, not from a place of correction or obligation. Now, obligation is easy to spot, right? But sometimes people say, no, this is what I wanted to do. I'm like, is it? Or is it the part of you that is correcting your past that wanted that? So it all comes back to how important it is, the self-leadership. And part of self-leadership is to take the time to be truly clear about what do you truly want. And I'll tell you an example. I'll give an example about that. This is maybe 3-4 days into the hospitalization. We're walking a little bit in the corridor with my husband, and I said to him, what do you truly want? Because the doctors were debating to do surgery, not do surgery, there are alternatives. And I said, what do you truly want? I asked him. Mm-hmm. And he said, I don't know if I want surgery or not. I want it to be very black and white. I want certainty. Whatever alternative we choose, I want to feel that this is the right thing. And now that they tell me choose, and you go, I don't know what to choose. Should I do the injection to this? Anyway, there were different options. So he said that. And the next day, I'm not kidding you. The next day, he woke up in so much pain, more than he came in when we first got into the emergency room. He could not even be in bed. He had to lie down on the floor with his feet up, which is not very pleasant to lie on the floor in the hospital, to tell you. But it was the only position he could just tolerate the pain because the meds were not helping. It was so acute I never seen him like that. That we actually asked to speak with the surgeon, and the surgeon said, there's no doubt you're surgical. But he asked for that the day before. Just a simple question. What do you truly want? He wanted clarity, and he got it. Now imagine if every leader would ask himself, or would have somebody ask them, what do you truly want for your company? Because everybody tells, oh, you should go after the seven figure, or you should go after the eight figure, or you should do this. Wait, what do you truly want? And that's the clarity, that's the self-leadership. And if you're clear, there's no way you would not attract that clarity, that what you're asking for. It might be immediate, like in him, it might take some time, but your job is to be very clear about what you want so the universe can join with you and you can co-create that.
Yeah. Man, all right, there's a lot. I'm going to have to go for a walk and process.
We didn't talk about marriage.
No,
but that's
didn't.
Okay.
We did.
A little bit.
We mentioned
yeah.
you were married and that I was too. And there we go. We snuck it in. Marriage. Hashtag marriage. I think there's far more to keep digging into this. And there's a recency bias in my mind because of some of the things I'm working on where I want to keep digging into it. But this is not meant to be a 3-hour podcast. Maybe one day I'll have one of those.
No, Rogan.
Yes. I'll turn into Joe Rogan. I'll shave my head and make 50 mil a year from podcasting. But until such a time, we'll wrap at a good time. But if somebody's listening to this, and whether married or not, but they think, man, I don't know what I truly want. I'm not exactly sure where my values are rooted. I don't feel like I have that clarity. Or maybe they've been making those corrective decisions. So that place of identity, getting clarity on an identity is not something you just do like a weekend retreat and then you're done. But if somebody wanted to make some progress in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, what advice would you give them to start to gain that self-awareness that you say is so critical as a starting point to all the things we've talked about?
First of all, you can always ask for clarity, by the way. If you don't know what you want, then ask for clarity. Pray for that. And then be sure that situations will appear in your life for you to understand what you want or what you don't want. Because sometimes we get very clear about what we want, understanding what we don't want. That's another way, and it's a valid way, by the way. And journaling on very important questions. If nobody was watching, if I had no fear, what would I create? If money was not a concern, what would I create? That allows you to really understand what is that you're truly compelled to create. What does your heart want? Mm-hmm. If tomorrow I'm gone, but I have a chance to give a last message to the world. What do I want to leave the world with? What is important for me that people know that I never dare saying, showing, sharing? So you want to ask yourself those questions, and from there, you're going to be guided to the next step.
Yeah.
If this company was not accountable to, I don't know, 100 employees, what would I do with it? How does my ideal life look like? Mm-hmm. Who do I live with? Where do I live? Who do I impact? So you have to bypass. We have the level of survival, and we have the level of the mind and the emotions. Mm-hmm. And then we have our soul. The soul is divided like in three sub-levels. You want to go higher and say, why was I created? Mm-hmm. When am I at my best? Kind of like the big leap, the unique ability, right? Mm-hmm. The genius zone.
Yeah.
What is it that I do that I enjoy doing the most, even if it's only 5 minutes at work? So it all starts with asking the deeper questions. In other words, connection. We have a crisis of connection with ourselves, with our own higher power, with our spouses, with our children. We feel like we're in a world extremely interconnected, but to be honest, we have a crisis of deep connection. And clarity is always found at the depth. I always tell people, if you're not clear, continue digging, continue asking.
Yeah. It's usually not like a 5 minute, what should I do with this major thing? And then just like, boop. Like you actually have to dig through a lot of like dumb ideas and thoughts and surface level things. And then all of a sudden you start, now I've hit something that's a little different. And then you start chewing on that.
It happens like the question. Yeah, go ahead. No.
I was just going to say, a lot of my clients deal with that, whether one-on-one or I'm dealing with a senior leadership team, is they're going through it and they're at the beginning, they're like, okay, yeah, we've said all this stuff. This is really dumb. And I'm like, just give it a minute. And then I keep asking them some questions to pull back and pull back. And I have to have people do this for me as well. And then they start getting, I didn't realize that's why I really wanted to go after this thing or this initiative or stop this, or why I wanted to leave the company or was feeling burnout. It wasn't working too hard. It was being misaligned with my purpose or something like that. But it took wading through all of these other ideas that didn't really stick the landing. But there is that sort of like ping of truth, right? That when you hit upon the thing that is what you were after and you're like, that's it. And then you can move with confidence, like you said, with no regrets.
That's right. And this is the Life Engineering Podcast is all about creating a life of no regrets. And when people say, what is a life of no regret? A life of no regret is a life in which you don't compromise on living that authentic self in your relationships, in your career. You don't compromise on what's truth to you, what's true to you. And just one quick, other ways to get to that clarity is using the questions from the Passion Test book. What are you doing? What are you having? And how are you feeling when your life is ideal?
Love that. I think everybody has a little time of reflection ahead of them. Hopefully they're going to take some action. But Gabriella, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your wisdom and stories from your life. If somebody wanted to know more about you, your work, the book, where should they go? What are the best places to get connected with you?
Sure. So GabriellaMbon.com.
Awesome. We'll have that linked up. We also will have a link to your book on Amazon, and we got a few other links we'll sprinkle in there. Also, do go check out Gabriella's podcast. She's a wonderful interviewer. I had a ton of fun with her.
Yeah, we laughed more when you were, I guess, you took me deeper, or maybe because I started with that story with the hospital.
I don't know. That was a set of serious tone. I can get goofy sometimes. Maybe our next one we'll cut up a little bit more. Okay. I'm sure we'll play some pranks, some jokes. Maybe we'll make the whole thing a fake interview and we'll be different characters. I'm sure it'll be a blast. At least we'll enjoy it. I don't know about any of the listeners. But speaking of the listeners, thank you so much for spending part of your day with myself and Gabriella. I hope that this was moving, insightful, and helpful to you in your leadership journey, because ultimately, while I enjoy doing what I do here, it's for you. I want to help you in any way possible move in your thinking and getting your version of success so that your mind is transformed, because that would be pretty sweet. If you do me a favor, like, rate, review, subscribe on whatever platform of choice that you like to consume podcasts on, video, audio, carrier pigeons, if you get it that way, scrolls. I don't know. People still reading scrolls? But your feedback, your comments would help shape future conversations. I want to see them. I will reply. And it would be meaningful for me to produce something that is of value to you. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.